welcome back to Winning with Data. I'm your host, Jake Schuster.
And Alec Coughlin, riding shotgun.
Awesome. And we are excited to welcome Miles Adkins from Snowflake. Welcome, Miles.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me here.
You've had a really cool career journey and you've worked with two companies that we partner with. I would love to start with the first, DataRobot. You were around when this automation revolution took off, and DataRobot was one of, if not the first, companies to really approach the problem of limited data science resources across business units and begin to tackle democratization of data and the concept of self-service analytics. So tell me what it was like to be in the middle of all that and how you saw businesses change the way that they work.
Yeah. So joining DataRobot, this was mid-2019. I kind of had just made the decision to move on from my very niche capital markets finance job, being an internal data science, and really wanted to get more broad exposure to the data science world. I had been working on a very narrow problem for quite a bit. Truthfully, really didn't even know what I was getting into when I joined DataRobot for the most part. Was just super curious to learn, knew some of the basics around the math of models, but had no real exposure to enterprise software sales. So it was an absolute fantastic learning experience above all to join DataRobot. So very appreciative for my time there. It was sexy. It was hot at the time, right? Data science, everyone kind of knew, like, hadn't totally popped yet in the market, but I felt like the people who could look 5-10 years down the road knew data science, AI, ML was going to be a thing. And at the time, it was all about, supervised ML, right? And how do we just go faster? Some of the leading edge companies, your digital natives, were already generating tremendous market cap by having, these new AI ML powered experiences, right? I mean, just think of your Uber app at the time, right? Like, how cool was that back in 2017, right? And it was all about just helping companies go faster, right? It was very hard to find talent, very hard to find, data scientists. And so, this concept of just automation, building some sort of product to meet the demand that we forecast for data science use cases was really the why behind why, DataRobot needed to exist as a company.
For those who haven't been inside of a product like that, what does it mean to approach many models versus a single model at a time, or hand tuning hyperparameters, and why does automation work and why is automation okay for subject matter experts?
Training models is very much an art, and with the different types of mathematical approaches out there, there was no sort of one direct path on use this model for this specific problem, use that model for this specific problem. You kind of had to take a buckshot approach to figuring out what model was going to give you the most juice, right? So data scientists would, go train a logistic regression model. They would go train a trees-based model. They'd go train a support vector machine model. And like that just took a lot of time, right? And so how do we just reduce the cycles of, this data scientist kind of having to reproduce, custom model after custom model after custom model to just, get into a place where they had something that was going to produce, enough lift, lift being, what's something better than just picking a random number, right? To justify the use case, right? And that just took a while. So automation was all about how do we just let you drop in your data set and bam, you now have a leaderboard of models to pick from, and we'll give you some interpretability tools. That at the most was the most sort of fundamental, problem DataRobot was trying to solve, just, reducing time to value there.
I think it's such a balance in so many businesses. How fast do we need an answer, but how good, how accurate, and how explainable does the answer need to be in order for it to be useful? And those are three conflicting things. So how have you seen data scientists evolve the way that they approach kind of those three factors?
Not much, truthfully, not much. I really got an appreciation for, and this comes from one of the companies that I worked for right before Snowflake, called Intelligent Cross. They're a fantastic CEO. He really gave me the appreciation for how much what I would describe as scientific iteration. Speed matters when it comes to, you know, company building, company value. You know, if I can just shave off one additional day because I was able to speed up this part of, you know, your job, Miles, you know, that's going to, you know, help us grow exponentially, right? I think today, some of us get how important, you know, iteration is to driving value. I still see just, again, a lot of data scientists are stuck, you know, building that custom model. Hey, like thinking about just a narrow use case, you know, kind of one after the other. And some of these use cases take so long. After a month, you know, who's inspired by any project after a month, right? Like that's really when you get into the, you know, oh shit, like this is real work now. Like all the sexy thing about what this model could do is, you know, completely forgotten. Now I have to kind of get this thing into production. I'm uninspired. You know, that's just not a place you want to be. And it's still everywhere, right? Even from your best companies in the world to people who are just starting their AI ML journey, this sort of custom building mentality is just so sticky that it's really, in my opinion, what's holding, you know, the entire market back.
Yeah, Miles, you bring up a couple of really good points there. One of which being that it's an art, right? But at the same time, there's an opportunity to move faster and get directional insights. We're a big fan of Snowflake. And so anybody that's listening to this that doesn't already know, we're a big partner, believe in you guys a ton. So by all means, this is not a sales pitch for Snowflake. We believe in them. So feel free to speak at any level of specifics. But one of the things that we see in our industry of sport often is sometimes there's non-technical senior leadership that is comfortable with on-prem in part because they can, you know, just point to what they've done in the past and they don't necessarily have the technical aptitude to understand the power of some of the things that you're saying in decision-making workflows that can be accelerated. And therefore, you know, data sets can turn into descriptive analytics, which can turn to predictive, which can help teams win more games. How would you help a non-technical general manager understand the benefit in a couple of sentences of moving from an on-prem model to one that incorporates Snowflake so that you're starting to build a more systematic way to harness machine learning to win?
Yeah. So you know, you said the evil word on-prem, and on-prem in my head registers as data silos. You know, there's so much data out there. The problem is it's just so siloed. It's on-premise. It's, you know, it's in the cloud, but it's still locked into some sort of, you know, technology that was just shifted from on-prem into the cloud, right? How can you build a winning strategy if you can't bring together all of your data to make the most, you know, informed decision to train, you know, the most accurate model? The one thing that completely, again, blew me away here, I'm by no means a master of reading the market here, but how much data challenges are actually plaguing the you know, call it data science space, AI ML space, right? I really grew an appreciation for what Snowflake was trying to do once I really identified the fact that, you know, data silos are really is what is also causing a lot of this, you know, just lack of productivity in our space. When it comes to Snowflake, it's not about just getting all of your corporate data into one spot for everyone to access and for everyone to use. You know, they took this vision even further. They said, hey, look, why don't we set up secure data sharing? Why don't we set up data clean rooms? Why don't we even enable a data marketplace? So, you know, maybe the GM of some sports team doesn't have access to, you know, weather data. They don't have access to, you know, some sort of geospatial data that they might be able to use, or those, you know, underlying compute functions that they need. You know, this allows them to get all the data that they can possibly get to throw at a specific problem. And you do that for enough problems, you're probably going to start to build competitive advantage there, right? It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to happen incrementally. But the teams that kind of are able to build this system with the right way, with access to all of their data, plus what you can get in the marketplace, plus through partners, is going to be the one that starts to stand out here, right?
But sports and athlete data is really sensitive, and it's scary to house it somewhere that you can't see.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we put our money in a bank, right? Your money in your wallet is no different than, you know, the data that you have. Where do you trust it most? I prefer mine in a bank compared to under my mattress. It's more right. That's you know, the simplest way to describe it. Just data security, right? What would you rather buy and pay someone to manage your data, or, you know, have to invest in the talent and et cetera to, you know, make sure your data is always secure, right? I don't know much about data security. Sounds like a pretty commoditized thing to me. Usually when something becomes commoditized, typically it's cheaper to, you know, just pay the service, whatever that costs, compared to, you know, managing all the legacy talent needed to, you know, do it in-house yourself, right? I don't think you're winning games because your data is more secure than somebody else, right? You should be focused on what is, you know, the competitive advantage that you can bring to your organization.
Come back to the modeling part. What does it look like to drive productive business value where answers come fast enough? What do your top businesses that you work with look like in terms of the puzzle pieces that they put together to have models really turn into business value?
The 1% have really broken this down into the simplest, you know, atomic pieces. They have an entire team just dedicated to getting the data into their data platform of choice. They have an entire team dedicated to just the data munging, the, hey, we got to go clean this up. They have an entire team dedicated to, you know, what we call feature engineering, turning this raw data into something that makes sense from a business perspective. They do that for modeling. They do that for model deployment. They do that for model monitoring. And they built these incremental sort of atomic units that can all work together. And now you can start scaling any one of them as you need to, you know, based on, you know, the types of use cases that you might have. This is probably most prevalent in like your top hedge funds in the world today who have really figured out how to do this at scale. You know, you'll probably find this at, you know, Google, Facebook, Meta, Microsoft, Apple. But there's a long tail that are telling one person to go through every single little step here, which are all very kind of nuanced and require a ton of expertise. And typically this is why you really just don't ever see that chain ever turn into value. But I think it's all about, you know, building the small components of a bigger factory. And then once they're all working together, the models just start to kind of roll out of the chain here.
Yeah. So you just mentioned a lot of really interesting and important component pieces, but those are also big scary concepts that probably involve expensive specialized folks to run them. So, you know, our observation is that sports teams thrive when they have a small to medium-sized group of subject matter experts that also know how to use data and work with data. How do different platforms that are out there allow businesses to keep a tight group that works across these parts of the life cycle?
It's all about the technology ecosystem, right? If you have all of your data in one spot on something like Snowflake, maybe you're looking at a data robot to automate that model building piece. You can focus as a subject matter expert on just integrating the different pieces of technology that you can rent compared to having to, you know, write yourself and still be highly effective in producing, you know, these AI models. You don't need to have, you know, each, if you can't staff it, there's definitely ways to go buy technology for each of one of these little pieces of the chain here.
You don't have to name specific companies, but like, what are the component pieces? What would you call them? What would they look like?
So first, you know, anything that helps you with feature engineering, right? Just taking raw data and getting it into a state where we quote, we call it, you know, ready to model. Even Data Robot does, you know, automated feature engineering. Large language models are starting to, yeah, you know, be very good at just, hey, here's some data that I have. Here's what I know as a business subject matter expert. Go ahead and write the code, right? On the modeling side, you have a ton of auto ML tools. So I think that's pretty commoditized at this point in time. And then on the deployment side, you know, there's 100, you know, startups out there in the ML ops space where, hey, I take a model, basically just throw it onto a Docker container, and now you can do inference and prediction.
There's a lot of M&A activity, mergers and acquisition activity in the AI space right now, especially among the big data platform, big data warehousing players like Databricks, like Snowflake. Why is this arms race happening? And what is the evolution going to look like in terms of the way that these big box data providers provide different capabilities to their users?
I think it really comes down to this shift away from your traditional, you know, SaaS buying experience where you're charging per license, you're charging, you know, per user, right? And it's now a consumption-based model. I think a lot of companies, a lot of startups, maybe, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, would still be around if they were using a consumption-based pricing model versus trying to figure out how much should I charge someone for, you know, my automated auto ML platform, right? Very hard to kind of figure out what's the value for the customer versus what I can charge. With a consumption-based model, it's very easily it's very easy to align value to whatever the customer is doing, and then just say, hey, look, like, all right, the more you consume, the more you're going to pay. It's a lot simpler. And so with the success of these consumption-based pricing models, now it's just a matter of how do I get people to consume more, right? And so any sort of, you know, value add capability that I can introduce to whatever the use case might be, it could be an ML lifecycle use case, it could be, you know, just a standard, you know, analytic use case. So, hey, I want to put data from somewhere into something like Tableau, Power BI. They'll buy it because they know this thing that I'm buying is going to have some sort of, you know, one-time fixed cost and then some sort of long tail, you know, revenue stream if I can get people to use it. It's very much a, you know, a standard sort of play. The big folks have figured out how to monetize it, right? It's that simple.
Yeah, you know, there's a question that it triggered because we were talking before we jumped on in regards to the breadth and depth of the clients you work with across various industries. And one of the things when it comes to pricing models, you know, in my experience, you know, a lot of the time, you know, the more mature the stakeholder, right, the more advanced, the more, you know, further along they are in building their factory, come with more nuanced questions around what they're buying versus what they're building versus the buy and the build and the pricing model and all the different business case, you know, conversations that come with it. But taking a step back and just remembering that we're in the sports space in particular, which on a general, you know, maturity, you know, kind of spectrum, you know, the sports industry is not as far along as, say, a fully digitally native, you know, company like an Uber or Airbnb and so on and so forth. But at some point in each of these companies, you know, life, they were less mature than they are today and so on and so forth. And so when you talk with clients that are in different spaces within that kind of data infrastructure and AI maturity, how do you meet them where they are and how do you help them get from where they are to one or two clicks further? What is that conversation like in a very tactical way? I think we would love to hear that.
Yeah, I think you said it right. What is their technical readiness at the present time? Who are the people, right? What kind of talent do you have? Do you need a more, you know, no code, low code solution for the current talent that you have? Like, what is the makeup of the team? And then from there, you can start to just help them establish the process, right? Here's the technology. Here's the process for, you know, getting from, you know, point A to point B. And it's really just rinse and repeat. And for someone on the sell side, it's really helping our product understand, hey, look, we don't have one persona here at Snowflake that does data science. We have like four of them. You have your business analyst, you know, that guy that you want to, you know, that knows SQL but has never, you know, seen an ML Python library in his entire life. How can he use AI, right? what does that experience need to look like for him to get value from AI? Typically, it's us building a fully managed solution, right? You just click a couple buttons and bam, you know, there's AI. So there's all the stuff that we can build kind of out of the box for people that have never even, you know, that don't even need to know what the implementation details are for some of the stuff, right? So there's plenty of that capabilities in the market. There's data scientists, there's ML engineers, there's, you know, developer operations people. There's a very nuanced list of all the different personas that exist out there. And it's just a question of how do I build the right product to meet them where they're at?
Yeah, I love the explanation of the business analyst type, because I think that's often what exists in the sports industry, you know, or there's one ML engineer, you know, on staff. And so I just hope that this revolution continues, that organizations keep wanting to see people who are less and less technically skilled able to leverage AI. I think we have on one end of the spectrum ChatGPT that my grandmother could use. At the other end, right, you have those Python notebooks. And I think it's the stuff in the middle that's really exciting.
Generative AI is going to be the great equalizer, right? No longer do I even need to know how to write code, write Python. You can just ask a chatbot to say, hey, here's my problem, and can you just go ahead and solve the problem, right? And this can be very much expressed as natural language. You know, give us some of the main details, and off it'll go, right? So generative AI is going to be a great equalizer in terms of productivity for everybody. And, you know, data science is not immune to this. It's very much going to be a disrupted field in terms of how people think about being productive with these new LLMs that are really just, you know, I think I love Jensen's phrase here, like an intern out of college, right? Like everyone can have an intern coming out of college at their fingertips for, you know, $10, $20 a month.
Yeah. And you're going to have to wrestle with that intern to get the work that you need out of it, but the capabilities are there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Miles Atkins, thanks so much for your time today.
Cool. Yeah. Happy to be on.